It smells like cat shit, cat piss, and fake coconut.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Attention replicants! This week on Geeks Without God, we're talking about Blade Runner 2049. It's the sequel and we're gonna spoil the shit out of it, so watch out.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
That's me, Molly Glover.
And Tim Wick. And as you
know,
can...
That's a Terminator noise. I'm sorry.
It was tense movie noise.
Yeah.
And the reason there's tense movie noise is because we're going to talk about Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, the tense movie noises.
Yeah.
That's a cyberpunk noise.
Cyberpunk. Totally cyberpunk. It is the sequel to the original Blade Runner movie with Harrison Ford.
Indeed.
Who's in this new one. And we are going to spoil the shit out of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as usual, when we talk about something, hey, if you don't want it ruined for you, or if us talking about it doesn't ruin it for you, make a decision about whether or not you want to continue listening to this episode.
Choose no.
And based on the box office returns from this film, the odds are you haven't seen it. So
your answer to whether or not you listen or not, based on whether you've seen the movie or not, may reveal if you're a replicant.
That's right.
That's a Blade Runner joke.
It is. We're going to void comp the shit out of you.
Yeah.
Like Tim said, it had kind of weak opening numbers, which unfortunately is a major measure of success for a movie.
Yeah, I mean, it did all right overseas, and that's actually about 90% of what it seems matters to. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the reason that they keep making fucking Transformers movies, because they make bank in China and other overseas markets. But
that's the reason they're going to do Suicide Squad 2.
Yeah, it has to be. Cause
Suicide Squatter.
Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad still alive.
Murder Suicide Squad.
I was just about to say it. Yeah. Yeah. Ugh.
Oy,
this movie was like the opposite of Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad was like Suicide Attempt Squad.
this movie, I think it had maybe nothing in common with Suicide Squad.
Cry for Help Squad.
So if you're not familiar with Blade Runner, the original. It was a 1980s cyberpunk movie that takes place in a kind of dystopian...
2019.
Is it 2019?
It's 2019.
Yeah, so there's a 30-year gap.
We've got not a lot of time for the flying cars.
Yeah. There's flying cars, there's engineered people called replicants who are superiors in many ways, I would say.
Androids.
They are...
They're not androids.
And gynoids?
They're not? They are non-mechanical androids.
They're kind of like...
They're biological.
They're like, artificially created people.
Yeah. I just can't remember. I know that there was... Because they have barcodes...
Right.
On their eyes and things. They're property.
Yes.
So that's an important distinction, is they're not people.
They don't have rights.
They're biologic.
They are not mechanical.
Biological, I guess, biological android?
Sure.
That's a weird way to put it, but
They're synthetic people.
Synthetic, yeah, that's good.
And they're very much people. They have feelings and drive and...
Implanted memories.
And implanted memories is part of what makes them... function as emotional, realistic people.
And in the original, Harrison Ford, Deckard, the whole time, as far as we know, is not a replicant.
He's
a Blade Runner. He's who we think is a human being who hunts replicants, right?
Right. Yep.
But it turns out, dun dun dun, we're not sure.
Well, so in the original Blade Runner, they kind of leave the movie with a lot hanging in the air about whether or not Deckard himself is also a replicant or if he's a human Blade Runner. Are you real? What makes you real? How do you define real? Are all kind of themes in the first one, and a lot of that echoes in the new one.
Yeah.
But the new one kind of, I would say, definitively points to the fact that, well, maybe not. No, does it answer the question about whether or not Deckard is a replicant? Absolutely.
I could have sworn that he, like, said to Ryan Gosling's character, like, models like us, or this, something like that. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought that he said, like, we, in a way, like, implying that they were of a similar kind.
He is not technically a Tyrell replicant. He is a newer, much newer breed.
Oh no, right. I'm meaning, you know what? No, when I say him referring to a we, I meant him and Bautista, not him and Ryan Gosling.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, in the new one in 2049, there's some question as to whether or not, Harrison Ford is a replicant because of the reproduction that occurs. That's right.
Yeah, there's they set something up between Harrison Ford and the industrialist who's recreated the replicants, and I
Jared Leto's character.
Yeah, and I don't have the name right in front of me right now. We're doing a
Tyrell,
great job.
Right?
No,
it's not Tyrell. Tyrell's from the original Blade Runner. So the Jared Leto character. Wallace, yes. He implies that Deckard is a replicant, but it seems to be in a way that is very vague. It's not... He almost wants to have Deckard question whether or not he's a replicant. And that seems to be the purpose of that line of conversation, not to necessarily reveal whether or not Deckard is a replicant, but to reveal that there is, but to embrace the fact that there's some question around it,
mm-hmm.
and to even suggest that Deckard himself is not 100% certain,
right?
Whether or not he's real.
Yeah, reading through it's Neander Wallace is Jared Leto's character's name. So I just Googled is Rick Deckard a replicant in 2049. So Ridley Scott has apparently always said yes. Harrison Ford has apparently always said no. And the new director says, I don't like answers, I like questions. So
I'm satisfied with that.
Yeah.
I'm all right with that.
But they say, like, there's some teasing in that, you know, Gaff tells Kay that Deckard is retired, which is a euphemism for killing a replicant.
Yeah.
Because
you don't kill them because they're not human.
Yeah.
You retire them to, like, dehumanize them.
Wallace says that Deckard might have been designed specifically to fall for Rachel to create a perfect specimen.
Right.
He mentions that.
Yeah. So design sure sounds like it.
But see, here's the thing about
Wallace
that.
It's always an implication. There's never, it's like he's trying to convince Deckard of something rather than has any absolute knowledge.
And Wallace, it would be almost impossible for Wallace to know one way or the other, mm-hmm. because of something I want to backtrack to. Tim, did you watch either of the live action or the third, the animated shorts before going to see Blade Runner?
No, I didn't.
Oh, so good.
Okay.
We should link to them.
Yeah, we totally will. So, and we might not be able to link to the animated one because technically it's only on Crunchyroll for now, but you can find it on YouTube. So there's three animated shorts, there's three shorts, two live action, one animated, that take place between the original Blade Runner and 2049 that fill in the gaps of what has happened in the story.
They're in 2021. I think 2038.
Yeah, and then
2048.
Right.
Yep.
And so they cover this event that happens in between where the last of the Nexus models, the Tyrell replicants, stage an act of terrorism with help from some sympathetic humans to cause a large EMP blast that destroys the vast majority of the records on Earth.
Just call it a blackout.
And they do mention they reference that in the film.
They talk about it in the film. They talk about it in the beginning of the credit roll, mm-hmm. but they show it happening in the animated series, which is the animated short, which is by the people responsible for Cowboy Bebop and Samurai Champloo.
That's what happens in 2021.
I think so.
I believe
it's the first
that's
one.
That's when the blackout happens.
Yeah, and then the next one is Wallace, Jared Leto's character, bringing his new replicants to the people in charge of keeping them banned and showing how obedient they are by having it carve himself up and stuff like that.
Gross. Which you can very clearly feel.
Which you can definitely feel. He's feeling the pain but obeying. And then the third short is Dave Bautista's story as a replicant in the year leading up to 2049 and why he is kind of on the run, why Kay is able to find him, the slip-ups that are his trail that Kay follows in 2049.
Beginning there, yeah.
I'd highly recommend watching them. If you've seen 2049, go see them in retrospect. If you are listening to this anyway and you haven't seen it, go watch them before you go see 2049.
Yeah, they definitely enhance the movie.
But, so because of the blackout, I don't think Wallace can have any way of knowing whether or not Deckard is truly a replicant, because how the fuck would he know unless it happened to be some of the data that was salvaged on those little crystal ball thumb drives?
Because it's only the Tyrell replicants that have the barcode in their eyeballs, right?
It's the Wallace ones. No, wait.
Because Kay has one.
And he's one of the Wallace ones.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay.
The newer generation.
Yeah. So here's something that I've read complaints about, and it's Ryan Gosling's acting. A lot of people refer to him as being a blank-faced robot and things like that, or just like, I think I also love David Duchovny, who has been accused of similar faults, I guess.
Mm.
I think that there is that Ryan Gosling's acting in this movie and in many other movies is very precise and very subtle. And it involves a lot of very subtle facial changes and body movements that I think people maybe aren't accustomed to. They expect there to be big emotional changes on a person's face when they emote. And I don't know. I thought he was fantastic. And I love Ryan Gosling. I think he's one of the greatest actors we have going on right now. Also, comparisons to Lars and the Real Girl that I saw later
that was
made me
so
laugh
funny.
Really hard.
Yeah.
Which is the movie where Ryan Gosling falls in love with a sex doll.
Right. So. As a way of coping.
As a way of coping with reality.
Yeah.
Yep. I didn't have those complaints, but I thought that you could read really, I thought, well on his face.
Yeah.
You know, you're watching the conflict in this character, you know, who's clearly he's been bred to obey, and he doesn't like it.
Yeah,
right.
The internal conflict was clear.
You know, the fact that they've programmed these creatures, these creations, not creatures, it's unfair. I mean, they're living things.
Yeah.
They've programmed these living things to do things they don't want to do.
Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah.
And they will still do them. He will still hunt down and kill his own kind because that's his job.
But eventually he probably breaks free of that programming. I mean, unless it was super in depth. And I mean, so Kay probably broke through his control programming because like, the other Nexus 9, Wallace's henchwoman, Love, she and the police chief should be able to order Kay around to not do all this hijinks. And Kay kind of comes to and does it anyway. He has kind of an awakening of sorts. But some of his memories are implanted and implanted by someone relevant to the story who may have implanted them in a way that allows him to break this programming.
I just want to wonder how Westworld is this?
Does he find free will, or was he programmed to save the person that programmed him?
And to me, the other replicant, she's programmed to obey Wallace, and she always will.
Right.
So it's like the police chief couldn't have ordered her to disobey the order she'd already been given from Wallace.
Well, I loved her. The murder replicant, Wallace's henchwoman. She was badass and evil as fuck.
There was a lot of complaints about this movie being misogynist or terrible to women and stuff, just because of all the naked ladies being used to advertise things, and then the Kay's Pris.
Yeah.
His version of Pris.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call her now.
I can't remember the individual one, but the product is Joy.
Joy, yeah. His Joy doll or whatever. His Joy. Yeah.
His real doll.
Yeah. But like And I historically have not been extremely sensitive to such things, so I understand that maybe my opinion isn't, you know, I will say this, my opinion doesn't represent all women by any means, but, like, I didn't feel that way at all. And anyone who thinks that in 32 years, we're not going to be using naked women to advertise shit, that we're somehow going to get past that, is, to me, like, super deluded. And they had a male version of the doll that they showed at one point. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, I don't know. It's some people were really, the few people I saw complaining about the movie saying it, not only was it not good, it was a disaster for women's rights and things like that.
Interesting.
I disagree completely.
Well, there are some points, I mean, throughout the movie, women are used as, are treated like objects.
Well, sure.
But I mean, that's kind of the theme of the movie is, people are objects. Yeah. I mean, to some extent, like,
right,
including sexual objectified, you know,
yeah,
sentient beings.
That was the theme of the first one. Like,
right.
I mean, really,
yeah.
Objectification is a big part of what Blade Runner,
actual
the original,
right?
Yeah,
literal
objectification, and I think that's the objectification of women in the film, in both films, feels to me more critical.
Yeah.
Again, I'm a dude, so
yeah.
So I'm a little, I question my own impressions, my own responses to those things. But to me, it did feel like that was the goal of the film, was to really cast a light on the idea of objectification and how this society, which, yeah, I mean, realistically, it can't be like this in 2049. But still, if you look at our own society,
mm-hmm,
and how we objectify women, and, mm-hmm, and if you carry that further and you assume, well, that's still going to happen,
mm-hmm,
that objectification is still there. But now we've created an entire race of people that we can objectify.
Yeah, right.
And that we create, you know, computer programs that,
yeah,
we can objectify. And the way it sort of damages the human relationships,
mm-hmm, totally,
that anybody in here has, that we are not shown any human relationships in either Blade Runner film.
No. In the 20 whatever, the Blackout, the animated short, mm-hmm, that takes place between one of the Nexus 8 replicants responsible for the Blackout, Trixie, is shown in a relationship with a human sympathizer who helps pull off the Blackout when it happens.
Which is still not a human-to-human relationship.
And no, but he is, loves her, probably. He supports her and does, like, sacrifices himself, basically, to pull off this big thing that'll save, you know, a lot of the replicants. But their dialogue together doesn't paint a very healthy relationship. He's like brushing her hair and talking about how he could never be with a human because, you know, humans are so ugly and so, you know, impure, but he can,
yeah,
but he can be with her because she's a replicant and they're pure.
He knows everything about her because it's specs.
Yeah. Well, it's even, though he loves her, it's still further objectification. It's still further, like, dehumanizing.
And you're meant, I don't know, at least I felt that it was intended that we were to see this as creepy. And as not healthy for either person involved, really, because they are both persons.
Totally.
You know, and so, yeah, I really, really liked it, and I thought that they did a great job in Blade Runner 2049 of imparting the artistic feel of the first movie.
Yeah.
Without feeling like they were just being, like, copying or doing a super retro thing, because the movie was, you know, in the 80s, and, like, I don't think they got Vangelis for the score, but it still
sounded really Vangelis. Like, and they did it really artistically. They did a good job of making it feel like these two films were set in the same universe.
Oh my God.
And that you didn't feel like, and I haven't gone back and rewatched Blade Runner since I watched 2049, but when I was watching 2049, I was really like, this feels like I could sit down and watch these two movies back to back, and I wouldn't notice the time that had elapsed between the production of the two of them. And I'm
Until
sure
you
that,
saw Harrison Ford.
Right.
Well, but I mean, just in terms of filmmaking.
Oh, sure.
In terms of filmmaking, it's like, yes, they use CGI in Blade Runner 2049, but it was used in really more subtle ways than they use it in a lot of other films to create atmosphere, to create sets and that sort of thing, but not to create like bad guys that move in weird kind of ways.
A world destroying beams from the sky. None of that shit.
Right.
So it felt like it all fit.
Hmm. And I felt that 2049 also still felt like a noir, which is something that I loved about the original Blade Runner, is that it felt like a noir film as much as a cyberpunk noir, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, with the dame and the case and the Chinese.
We often go hand in hand.
And,
totally.
And so this, I was a little worried that with our current society's desire for everything to be a fucking action film, that they might try to make Blade Runner 2049 some kind of like action-y shoot 'em up sort of, you know, thing. And I'm really grateful that it still felt like a noir.
There's still a lot of action scenes,
there's action in noir too, but like it just had that, it had that slow build. It had that feel of like something's going on. And you know, there's like, you just get something's going on. I don't know what, but there's
the hero gets his ass kicked a number of times.
Yep.
Like really on the losing end of things for the majority of
walking into situations that just fuck him over.
Which is nice because, of course, they set up, he's a replicant. He is more powerful than a human.
Yeah.
And, but, I mean, he's often going up against other replicants. And they really establish that he gets hurt.
Yeah.
Gets
stabbed a bunch.
Yeah.
They did a good job, too, with the way that they told us that Kay was a replicant. It wasn't this whole like, I'm Kay and I'm a replicant or anything weird. I mean, just, I don't know. It felt elegant. Like, I think one of the first things is like him going after someone who's like, you get off on this, killing your own kind.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. Like, how can you do this? And that's a good way to, you know, I mean, I guess it isn't technically showing, not telling, but kind of. I mean,
they illustrate he's a replicant through everyone else's prejudice against him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to it being like, I don't know.
Something kind of neat. So in the original Blade Runner, the replicants in the movie, like Roy Batty and Pris, they're all Nexus 6. Mm-hmm. They last 4 years. Rachel is a Nexus 7, and she has an open lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a prototype with, apparently, we need to find out, reproductive organs.
Mm-hmm.
Nexus 8s are the, like, Iggy from the animated short, or Sapper Morton, which is Batista's character, and they have an open lifespan. And then Nexus 9s are the first ones made by the Wallace Corporation, like Kay and Love. Mm-hmm. They have an open lifespan, but they can be limited in that life. It's custom, right? So if Nexus 7 was a prototype run, that the only one we know of is Rachel, and she has reproductive organs, mm-hmm. and she has an open lifespan, there's really no reason that you couldn't really push for the argument that Deckard is a replicant still. Like we don't know any other Nexus 7s. We only know Rachel.
Yeah, he's probably a 7.
Well, that would be it.
Yeah.
If they were designed for each other, like Wallace proposes.
And designed to procreate.
Yeah.
So he would also have reproductive organs.
Exactly.
Because
and an open lifespan, because he lives to... She's still alive. No, she died in childbirth. Right. Those are her bones.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The kid's alive.
They show something of her.
Yeah.
Yeah. The kid's alive. She was great, by the way. The artist, the woman in the room.
The memory artist.
Memory creator.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was really great. And, I
fucking
liked,
horse.
Yeah. Yeah. It's for being a, you know, crazy girl locked in a room with, you know, as a character, I thought she did a good job.
Not a ton of depth, like beyond.
I thought she brought depth. To
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
You felt things from her when she was in there, not just like, oh, cool, crazy girl in a thing who has magical something powers.
Magical dream powers. Magical memory creation powers.
Right.
You know, and the thing is, I didn't even feel she was crazy. It was like I was worried that she was going to come off as crazy. And, I mean, she was a little eccentric because she spends her life locked in, you know, out of
maybe
contact.
Fragile is a better word.
Fragile, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a good term for what she was.
I mean, she's not like, you know, Sherlock's sister.
So we all agree that replicants are alive. They have personhood. They have emotions and stuff.
Yeah.
What about Joy?
I would say that Joy is alive in that she felt panic when she knew that it was like when she's about to be turned off.
Yeah.
And she's like, you can see her eyes widen and she like kind of leans. She says like, I love you as it's.
Yeah.
As I mean, that's. That,
murdered in front of his eyes.
If there isn't a human thing, if you know, other than knowing you're about to die, feeling that panic and wanting to tell the person you love, you love them with your last breath, that feels very human to me.
And we don't even have to say human, person.
Person.
Yeah.
That feels
personal. Sentient.
Sentient.
Whatever. What do you think, Tim?
I think that's one area where the movie is a little unclear because there's the moment at the near the end where Kay is like looking at the advertisement.
Oh my God!
Joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can clearly see his the conflict in his response to that. But I agree with Molly that I think the way that character dies, for lack of a better term, indicates some sort of sentience, something beyond artificiality. I mean, how do you program that? How do you program fear of being turned off?
Well, they obviously did.
Yeah.
Because the replicants all have it.
Right.
I mean, they all Bautista runs.
Oh, yeah.
They are afraid of being retired.
But the replicants aren't computers. They're biologics. They have
brains.
But yet
they're still programmed. They are programmed. We know this. That's an undeniable fact.
I implanting a memory is especially the Nexus 8s. Or no, 9s, I mean. Okay. The Wallace
9s
ones.
9s for sure. And Bautista's character is an 8.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, okay, how about this then? If a program can be indistinguishable from sentient or not, does it matter whether or not it's a person? Like, if we can't tell the difference between whether or not it's alive or not, does it matter? Like, isn't it just basically alive at that point? Like, if we can't tell the difference,
this is a very good opportunity to tell you all that you should all read Cargill's book Sea of Rust.
Oh,
I mean it. If these kinds of questions interest you, if this movie interested you, you need to read Cargill's book.
See, and that's what I like about Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049, is it is science fiction and it's noir and it's all those great things, but it makes you ask these questions.
Yeah.
It really is a philosophical film about the nature of being something, of being alive.
You mean, do androids dream of electric sheep?
I don't. It's
no.
That's what it's based on.
I know.
I mean, very loosely.
Very loosely.
Very loosely.
There's not rock throwing holograms or whatever.
No, but I guess the idea being it's based on that in the sense that that was probably one of the first books to address the idea, and therefore all ideas about this afterward have been loosely based on that.
Totally.
Well, and Blade Runner was an adaptation of Do Androids Dream of Electric?
Yeah.
Theoretically, Westworld is kind of, you know, an adaptation of that book.
Well, yeah. So, before we get to five questions, do you think we'll get another Blade Runner movie 30 years from now or sometime before then? Will they do Blade Runner 2079?
You mean like when Ryan Gosling's in his 60s?
Sure. Yeah, will we see an old agent, Officer K?
The movie leaves a lot up to interpretation. I mean, it doesn't necessarily follow that Agent K lived through the end of that film.
No, not necessarily.
We don't know.
That ending scene is brutal as fuck. For him. I mean,
I don't think we'll see another one. I think that they will, not just because of weak whatever sales or anything. I think the story they wanted to tell in terms of feature films is probably done. We might see more shorts.
Okay.
Maybe a series, but
like the Animatrix movies they did, where they did like six shorts together. They'll do like a series of shorts.
All better than the Matrix sequels.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, that's the thing. Like, if there's wiggle room in the world is a great creation.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I think Blade Runner 2049 was so specifically meant to tell us the rest of Deckard's story.
Sure.
And Rachel's story, really, and that was what it was designed to do. And that story is now told. We know the end of that. So I think maybe if they were going to make another movie, it would be starting a whole thing over.
Yeah. I would very much enjoy it if they made another film in that reality.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's likely.
A Rogue One.
In the interim.
Sure.
Like a full.
I'd watch that. All right. Let's go to five questions.
Five questions.
Molly, who do we have answers from?
We have five questions. We have five answers from Javier Cano.
Awesome.
He says, hello there. This is Javier again. Love the new five questions, and I had to chime in back in May.
Perfect.
Thanks, Javier.
Tim, you want to start us off?
I would love to. Hey, Javier, what conspiracy theory do you find most interesting or compelling?
I have to go with the flat earth theory. I understand questioning what you're told, but the level of self-delusion, cognitive dissonance, and old-fashioned batshittery required to believe that the shape of the earth has been a global, scientific, worldwide conspiracy for the last 500 plus years just blows my mind.
Yeah, it's amazing the amount of mental gymnastics you have to do
to
be a flat earther.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
The amount of work you have to do to believe that calls into question whether or not you could get anything else done in your life.
Because, like, if you really believe it's true, why don't you take a boat to the edge of the world?
Well,
prove it. Get in a boat and go to the edge of the world and show us the edge.
If you believe in flat Earth, like, if you believe in flat Earth, that means you also deny, like, any math that is algebra up.
Yeah.
Like calculus is right out.
Mm-hmm.
The math supports it so obviously that.
Also, where does Santa live then, geniuses?
Oh, checkmate. Question number two, what is your perfect 2-week vacation?
I recently traveled with my wife to our first atheist convention in North Carolina. We went there a couple of days early because we wanted to go visit the gemstone mines nearby. I've always been obsessed with sparkly rocks, and this was an opportunity we couldn't pass up. We loved it. With all of that unnecessary backstory, my perfect 2-week vacation would be 2 weeks of unrestricted access to gem mines around the country. Not just the tailings, but the primary sites.
Oh.
That sounds cool. Fucking amazing, yeah. Actually.
A precious stone tour.
Yeah, I too have been obsessed with like rocks and gemstones since I was a kid. Minerals, if you'll have it. Yes.
All right.
They're minerals.
2 weeks destroying the earth. Well done.
No. Just touring where they've destroyed the earth.
Touring where they're destroying
the earth. 2 weeks of blood diamonds.
Yeah, that's like the Polymet copper nickel mine.
Yeah.
All right, question number three. What is a movie or book that changed your life?
This one's a little personal, but I guess anything that changes your life will be.
Yeah, you'd think.
I grew up in a family where emotional manipulation was the order of the day. There was never any real malice in it, but we tend to be stubborn and unevenly tempered, so emotional manipulation it was. Unlike most of my family, I prefer to avoid conflict. Obviously, this made me a ripe target. The end result is that by the age of 13, I had come to the conclusion that I could either shut down emotionally or commit suicide. I chose the latter. In order to get some peace, I would often go to the movies by myself. In 1991, after 6 years of not allowing myself to feel anything, I went to watch My Girl. A minor movie with nothing really important about it, except that I felt a tear run down my cheek at the end. When the movie was over, I sat in my car crying like a crazy person. I had forgotten what it was like to feel. I was crying because I couldn't remember what it was like to cry anymore. That was my first step toward finding myself again after too many years of numbness. That's a great fucking answer.
Yeah. Damn.
Everybody else needs to give an answer like that or just fuck that question.
Yeah.
No, that's not true.
I'm impressed that B-movie changed his life so much.
Oh, I get it.
I love My Girl. It made me cry.
I thought you meant B-movie, like it's an okay movie, B-movie like buzz buzz.
B-movie, that's
right.
B-movie.
Wow, yeah, that's heavy. Thank you for that answer.
I had to lighten it up a little bit with the B-movie joke.
Totally.
That was a great answer.
Question number four or five.
Four.
What's the geekiest thing you've ever done or said?
I love movies. A few years ago, I went to a showing of Nosferatu with a live orchestra playing the score. I know it's not ultra geeky, but it made the movie truly interesting for the first time.
That's awesome.
I love watching silent movies with a live score. Yeah. Because that's the way silent movies were performed. I mean, not if you like watch a silent movie in some backwater town, they'd have just a live piano player. But like if you went to the big movie houses in New York or LA, they would have a live orchestra performing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And watching a silent film like that really transforms the experience.
So. Someone did that with Metropolis here, like, I want to say like 15 years ago or something. Yeah.
Well, it's like, I remember when I saw Annie and they go to the movies and it was like, that's not what going to the movies is like anymore.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt. It's a different thing. All right, question number 5. What's your favorite hangover cure?
My favorite cure for a hangover has to be corned beef hash with diced serrano peppers with a big bowl of menudo, which is spicy tripe soup with hominy and fresh peppers and onions. But that is much more difficult to find.
You had me until menudo.
Yeah. I think you like menudo. It's just tripe.
Isn't it pork?
No, I think tripe is beef or is beef intestine.
Yeah, tripe is beef.
Yeah, tripe is beef intestine.
Yeah. I don't know.
All right. Javier, thank you. He says, keep up the great show, guys.
Oh, thanks, man.
We're going to do that. We're keeping it up right now. Thanks for asking us, too.
If you have answers for our questions, you should send them to us. Send them to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. Wow. So Blade Runner, did you see it? And what'd you think? How did it compare to the original? What do you think some of the major themes were? As we talked about, do you think there was unacceptable levels of objectivizing?
Objectifying.
Jesus Christ.
Objective phenomenal.
Yeah, wow.
Do.
It's phenomenal.
Was the objectification of women acceptable for the setting and the plot? Was it an abuse of that narrative ability? Let us know what you think. We'd love to hear in a comment, or you can do that on the Facebook post, on the Patreon post if you're a Patreon supporter, or on the website geekswithoutgod.com,
which we check so infrequently.
It's mostly spam, but our spam filter catches it. So otherwise, we will see y'all later, you replicants. Describe in single words only the good things that come to your mind about your mother.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time. You can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
But do we know if they're replicants? I mean, maybe they're not replicants.
Oh my God.